Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and when most city council speakers take the stage for their first State of the City address, they tend to offer up an ambitious grab bag of topics to please all kinds of constituencies and politicians. When Melissa Mark-Viverito, for example, gave her last speech as speaker, she talked about protecting immigrants, criminal justice reform, and public housing. But last week, in his first State of the City address, the new city council speaker, Cory Johnson, made the case that if the city's transportation system isn't working, then all of those other topics, they're all non-starters.
You want a tax base that supports cops and firefighters, schools and libraries? None of that is possible unless you have an economy that's thriving. And our economy lives and dies on how people move around.
The whole 45-minute speech was about that one thing, why the MTA should dissolve and why the city should be in charge of the buses and subways, not the state. So we're going to get into that one thing with the city council speaker who's with me now, but also one other thing, Amazon. The speaker appeared alongside Elizabeth Warren in Long Island City Friday night. It was a presidential rally, but it also felt like an explicitly anti-Amazon coming to Queens event for the senator from Massachusetts. We welcome Speaker Cory Johnson back to WNYC. Hi.
Good morning, Brian. Just to be clear, I wasn't in Long Island City with Senator Warren. I met with her at the LGBT Center in Greenwich Village before she went to Long Island City that night for the rally.
Oh, you were not there?
I was not there.
Okay. Councilmember
Van Bramer was there.
He was there. Senator
Gennaris was there. Yeah.
So I missaw somebody. I will take responsibility.
My doppelganger was there.
Your doppelganger was there on stage with the senator, but not you. Okay. So I hear you on that, and I stand corrected. Is that the side of history you want to be on, especially if you run for mayor in 2021?
Well, I think the Amazon debacle, the collapse, the entire process is a lot more nuanced and complicated than folks have wanted to talk about. We've wanted to cast it in a very binary way. Either you were for Amazon coming or you were against Amazon coming. And I'm not sure that actually accurately reflects what really happened. I had significant problems with the process involved or the lack of process. The fact that they were subverting the city's land use review process, which the council has a role in. I had concerns about the level of subsidies, the $500 million direct cash grant and the $2 billion in as-of-right subsidies. I had issues with Amazon's labor track record on how they treat their employees and opposing unionization. I had an issue with their collaboration with ICE on getting rid of and helping aid and abet the deportation of undocumented folks in the United States of America. So I raised all of those concerns. In my district, not far from where we're sitting, Brian, you have Google, which has been in Chelsea for more than 10 years. They haven't gotten subsidies. They've worked with the community. They haven't had a huge impact on the local community in a detrimental way. And I think the Amazon deal should have been fashioned after that. Amazon could come here. Any company can come here. But it doesn't mean it's right for the richest man in the world worth $150 billion, a trillion-dollar company, that they should get all those benefits and not want to compromise and have a real discussion with elected officials and policymakers about significant concerns.
Are you endorsing Elizabeth Warren or anyone for president yet?
I'm not making an endorsement yet, though. I think we have a really talented field, and I look forward to meeting with folks if they'll meet with me and having a conversation about the future of the Democratic Party. I think we need someone who can inspire people like Barack Obama did in 2008, who appeals to all different cross-sections of the American electorate, and I look forward to people come to New York, so if I have the chance to meet with them, I'll meet with them.
And last thing about Amazon, do you have any information, given your position, about whether the mayor and the governor's attempt to restart those talks might bear fruit, and would you like to see that happen?
Well, I know that the governor called into your show a couple of weeks ago or last week, and he said he didn't believe that they were going to come back. I don't have any information that they're coming back, and that's all I know.
Let's talk about Big Apple Transit, what you are calling a city-controlled transit system. So give us the elevator pitch. Why is municipal control of subways and buses better than MTA control?
Well, you know that transit is the lifeblood of our city, and right now it's in crisis. We have the slowest bus system in the country. It's faster to walk down 42nd Street than it is to wait and take a bus, and there are a million reasons why we're in this crisis with subways and buses, but the main reason for the crisis is accountability. The current MTA structure is designed to deflect accountability. New York City, we barely have a seat at the table. We give our tax dollars, we give our subway and bus fares, we make direct contributions to the MTA. We fund 70% of the MTA's annual budget, and we barely have a seat at the table. And so municipal control would reshape the political dynamics and hopefully provide accountability for a system that is defined by its lack of accountability right now. We need a 22nd century subway system. We don't even talk about expanding the subway system because it costs too much and because we are lurching from crisis to crisis. And this is about saying the city should have control over the subways, the buses, and the tolls, the Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority. You can keep the MTA if they want to have Metro North and Long Island Railroad. And we need real accountability for the future of transit in New York City.
And listeners, we can take a few phone calls for New York City Council Speaker Cory Johnson, specifically on his plan for New York City control of the buses and subways. Well, let's give Amazon a rest for now. For now, we'll keep taking many points of view on Amazon to the extent that continues to be a conversation. But on the speaker's major initiative to try to get New York City control over the buses and subways, what do you think? What do you want to ask? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And as you know, in response to your plan, the governor said basically if the city wants municipal control, then go for it. But he also said the city can kiss the, quote, $10 billion in state funding goodbye.
Well, first of all, I'm glad to see that the governor admitted that the city doesn't control the MTA and that he does and that the state does. As to the 10 billion reasons that he laid out, he claims that it can't work and that they will take the money away. Well, New York State and the federal government, they provide plenty of dollars for things that they don't control in New York City on social service programs. The pre-K initiative, which is one of the mayor's signature initiatives, is funded by state dollars in a big way. Mayoral control of schools. We get a huge amount of school funding from the state. So I actually want to have a substantive, serious conversation. I laid out a 104-page white paper and report accompanying the speech, talking about the ways to get it done, talking about greater local taxing authority on the way to get it done, talking about new revenue streams. And the MTA, it is a regional issue. And in our plan, we talked about ensuring that the commuter railroads, Long Island Railroad and Metro North, are not financially ruined by doing something like this. So we would need the governor on board. We need the state legislature on board. So I actually want to have a real conversation about this. I want to work with folks who actually want to talk about getting this done. It's important. And I look forward to engaging in that conversation with the governor and the state legislature and taking my case to the people, because the people who take the subways every single day know the crisis that we're in.
Is some of that state funding specifically earmarked for New York City transit, the buses and subways, or does it all go to the MTA and then they distribute it?
Well, right now, the MTA is Frankenstein's monster of transit subsidiaries. You have the Staten Island Rail, you have Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority, you have the buses, the subways, Long Island Railroad, you have Metro North, and you have other subsidiaries layered in there. Right now, it is unclear because the MTA, when they lay out their capital plan, it goes to a different committee. In my speech, Brian, I laid out how convoluted the governance structure is of the MTA. You have 17 board members of the MTA, but there are only 14 votes because four of the members only get a quarter of a vote. But when you add on the people who are non-voting members, which are six members, you get 23 votes. You have 23 people. How many listeners could name a single member of the MTA board right now? Not many. And so we need need a clear budget process. And in the plan, we talk about having it go through the city's budget process. The city council would have hearings. You could appoint a board that looked like the water board in New York City, which the mayor appoints and which there's public oversight on. And we lay out a specific way of what governance should look like, about what accountability should look like, about what funding streams should look like. And all the folks that have looked at it, the experts, most of them have said this is a real plan. It makes sense and it's worthy of discussion and debate.
Let's take a phone call. Curtis in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, Corey. First of all, I appreciate you just bringing this issue to the fore, and I support your plan. I just think accountability, I mean, we always like to lionize the private sector. Well, the private sector is the private sector because it has accountability. There's usually one person at the end of the day that you can, you know, that's the lightning rod, but that person also has control. So I completely agree with you on your plan. I think part of the Amazon backlash, I know, Brian, you don't want to talk about Amazon, and, you know, and I don't want, this is not the, where this is going. But I just want, you know, I think a lot of that backlash was because people don't want, you know, the subways were just too crowded. And it was like 25,000 people in Long Island City. You ever been to Long Island City? Good luck. My question's a little bit different. I'm a middle-class guy. You know, I mean, in a lot of parts of the country, six figures is, you know, and I know I don't want to sound like, because I can't grew up in Hollis, Queens. So I know during, like, you know, some pretty dark times. Mm-hmm. So I know what it is to struggle. I grew up with a single mother. I know, like you or Corey, I know you came from an economically, like, distressed background as a kid. And so I know what that's like. And so I don't want to make this sound like a first-class problem. But at the exact same time, there are, like, you know, a lot of taxes hit middle-class people. I think the very wealthy are just fine. They don't care. And they're doing just great. You know, I think people with low income levels, they're trying to struggle. And I have a real empathy for that. At the exact same time, I feel like as a middle-class guy, you know, a lot of taxes hit us repeatedly. And I know I'm
And Curtis, just for time, are you getting to a critique of the speaker's tax proposal with respect to city takeover of the subways and buses?
My critique, I'm just asking if there can be possibly a grant program around middle class people that want to start startups or want to start that sort of thing, you know, and if that could be possibly folded into this proposal or folded into some future tax plan. We have a $94 billion city budget. Is it possible that we could have maybe a $25,000 tax grant for people who are creating products that are going to benefit directly the economy of New York City?
Curtis, thank you. I'm going to leave it there. Speaker?
Well, Brian, I know we said we're going to focus on the subways, but also I think this does bring up Amazon in some way. I mean, I think the bigger issue here is what are we doing to help entrepreneurs, to help small businesses, to help startups, to help small companies and people who are struggling in New York City to start a business, maintain a business, provide jobs? What are we doing to help them? We're helping plenty of corporations through these corporate as-of-right subsidies and incentives. What are we doing? And I think one of the biggest things that we could do is tackle the affordability crisis that is plaguing our city right now. I mentioned in my speech, Brian, that more than 40% of New Yorkers, more than 40% are living at or below the federal poverty line. That is almost one in two people when you walk around the city. And so we need to look at helping those folks and middle-class folks. The subways is the great equalizer. It is the most egalitarian thing about New York City when it's working. Rich people ride it, poor people ride it, middle class people ride it, everyone rides it. And if you fix the subways, you're helping everyone. You're hopefully making neighborhoods more affordable if there's better service in the outer boroughs. One of the things we talk about is I want congestion pricing to get done in this upcoming state budget. And if it gets done, we want to make sure that some of that money goes into transit deserts, areas that aren't being served by subways and buses in the right way. So it's a bigger conversation about the affordability crisis that's gripping New York City, coupled with the subways and buses and how unreliable and dysfunctional they are.
Jeff in Park Slope, you're on WNYC with Speaker Corey Johnson. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Speaker. Thanks a lot for your efforts, Corey. I appreciate your enthusiasm and your vision. But I do have a, I hate to see a critique because I love the plan for taking over the MTA, but I think that it's such a difficult political effort that's going to take a long time to accomplish. So I'm glad you put it on the table. But I think the city councils really should be focusing a lot more attention on land use, because the development of the city is what's going to drive our future needs in transportation. And there's so many developments that are just so out of place and out of touch with day-to-day New Yorkers, like Hudson Yards, the Billionaires Playground, and we have, I'm in Brooklyn, and so I've gone to a couple of the meetings regarding the development of the Gowanus. And they're putting up drawings and conceptual drawings of saying, hey, we're going to change the zoning to upzoning so they can get supposedly affordable housing. And these buildings don't look like Brooklyn. These buildings look like they're cookie-cutter buildings that could be anywhere in Dallas or in the Hudson Yards or in Seattle. And it's not really taking into account what the residents need. And then there's the other issue of commercial real estate and supporting small stores and the vacancies along our main shopping districts. So I think the city council should make this. I think land use should be an emergency situation, all hands on deck, and getting as much input as possible so we can steer the city better for the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, I appreciate that question and that comment. You know, land use issues are probably the most lightning rod issues that we look at in the city when you talk about changing the character and density in neighborhoods. We saw it in Inwood. We saw it in East New York. We saw it in the Jerome Avenue section of the Bronx. And so these are complicated issues. In Gowanus, you know, Brad Lander, the council member there, has spent, I think, almost 2 years in a community planning process looking at what the density should look like and trying to help facilitate and create as many affordable housing units as possible. As you said, we are growing as a city. We need to create more housing. We need to do it in a smart way, a thoughtful way, in a way that actually achieves more affordable housing for communities all across the city, not just communities of color, not just low-income communities, but all types of communities. And that is the balancing act that we always have to look at. The Gowanus plan looks like a pretty good plan to me in the process that it's gone through, and I'm proud of Councilmember Lander and the time and effort he's put into it.
Hudson Yards, which he referenced, has been getting a lot of scrutiny recently from New York Magazine, from the Times, elsewhere, for having, as I read it, even bigger tax breaks, maybe that's per square foot, I don't know, than Amazon was going to get. And for what? And that's in your district, right?
It's in my district. And just so folks know, Hudson Yards came out of the fact that the obscure board that we've been referencing with regard to Amazon, the Public Authorities Control Board, killed Mayor Bloomberg's Olympic West Side New York Jets Stadium, which that site was slated
for that area. But now it has all these big residential towers going up.
Well, on the Eastern Rail Yards, it's mostly commercial towers, retail spaces. The Western Rail Yards, which haven't been built yet, is going to be residential. There was a small amount of affordable housing that came out of it, but that project went through ULURP. That project went through the land use process. That project got community feedback. The local community board, which I was on, supported that project with changes. The council member, then Speaker Christine Quinn, supported that project. It went through a community process.
Different than Amazon, yes. But I'm sure Jeff would like to know, the caller, why did you support that project?
Well, it was a different time. You know, we had just fought the West Side Stadium. People were all hands on deck in opposing putting a huge stadium on the West Side. And then we knew that it was going to go through the land use process, which it did. Now, none of those processes are perfect, but at least there was the opportunity for community feedback. The city council voted to approve it. I wasn't on the city council at the time. I was on the local community board. And so I think that people wanted something that was going to spur economic development that was different than a jet stadium. And I think this is what was presented to us.
And I guess his other underlying question was, why make city control of the subways your sole and front and center focus in the State of the City address when that's kind of a conversation starter for possible fruition years down the road, rather than what he characterized and maybe what a lot of New Yorkers would characterize as an emergency front and center land use crisis in this city?
Well, I love this city beyond all belief, and we have a lot of problems, a lot of issues, a lot of things we can fix, and most speakers, not all, stand stand up at their State of the City and they give 38 different proposals to 47 different issues.
Right.
And
but,
they go
but
through
why
grab
this one? Why this
because
one and this, not that one?
Because this is the biggest emergency that's facing New York City. It has to do with our economy. It has to do with how more than 6 million people get around every single day. And I wanted to think big, think bold, do something innovative, start the conversation, get this on the table. When Mayor Bloomberg proposed mayoral control of the school system before he ran for mayor in 2001, people said it's too complicated. There are these fiefdoms. You can't break it up. It's impossible. It's not politically feasible. The state legislature will never do it. He got it done. He started the conversation. I wanted to do the same thing here.
With New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, just one more thing on this. Question coming from our Gothamist team, who asks, at the same time as advocating for a car-free culture, you've come out against a proposal to create a car-free busway on 14th Street, and they want to know, what are your specific reasons for opposing this measure, and how would you respond to the many transit advocates who see this as a betrayal of your recent rhetoric?
Well, I think it's a lot more nuanced and complicated than folks want to make it seem. The busway proposal that was put forward by advocates and was looked at by the MTA and the Department of Transportation was out of the L train shutdown. I support dedicated bus lanes. I support select bus service. The busway, as it was currently designed, is a compromise that allows the busway that was proposed was a compromise that allows cars in bus lanes any time of the day as long as they stay on one block only, and deliveries are also allowed on the bus lanes even in places where there's only one bus line. It was designed as a 15-month band-aid, not as a permanent solution, and I support getting protected SBS lanes, which would be more effective and revolutionary. This was demonstrated in Boston, and the key feature here is protection. Cones would be replaced by flexible bollards during the entire day. Also, having a lane for deliveries would prevent deliveries in the busway. And so I look forward to having that conversation with the Department of Transportation, with transit advocates, and having a nuanced conversation about how to get this done. The M14 buses are slow. They do need to be improved. We do have too much congestion. I look forward to doing that in a thoughtful, community-based, comprehensive way, looking at it in a way that will make a big difference. So it's not in any way in contradiction to the plan I put out. We didn't get to talk about it, but I put forward a master plan that we need to vote on to look at the entire city as a whole as it relates to bus lanes, bike lanes, and giving transit signal priority for buses. And I look forward to doing that, and I'm committed to it.
And let me ask you about one emerging issue that's not transit before you go. Questions are being raised about Thrive NYC, spearheaded by First Lady Shirlane McRae, mental health program, on whether or not the $850 million, that's the figure I see, is being allocated well, whether it's having any impact, whether they are even interested in measuring the impact. I'm curious, if this is where city council comes in, do you think there needs to be more oversight of Thrive NYC and how effectively that money is being spent? And do you have anything planned?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be part of the budget process. We just started the budget process last week and started having our hearings on the mayor's preliminary budget plan. He asked for $750 million in savings and cuts to agencies across the board because of the financial downturn that we're in personal income tax monies falling short in December and January because of stock market volatility. And Thrive NYC is not different than any other program. We have to look at it in a thoughtful, meaningful way. I do want to applaud the First Lady for raising this issue, putting it in the forefront, talking about mental illness and mental health challenges for New Yorkers, destigmatizing it and coming up with creative ways. But any program, regardless of what it is, there needs to be metrics. There needs to be ways that you can measure it in a thoughtful, good way. And this isn't personal to the mayor or to the First Lady. It's really just about asking questions and seeing if there's a way to use the money in a more effective way. One of the things that I want to look at is how to help the severely mentally ill, people who are really, really, really struggling, who you see on the streets and on the subways.
Thrive doesn't do that?
Maybe it needs to do a little bit more of that. People who are decompensating in front of our eyes on the streets of New York City, how much are we providing to them? And we need to look at that in a meaningful way, and I look forward to doing that.
And are you saying that the mayor, while asking for cuts in so many agencies, exempted his wife's main project?
Well, there were no cuts associated with Thrive NYC or any of his other signature programs, which is okay. That's not personal to him, but it's part of the process. The council has priorities. He has priorities. There's a negotiation. People say the budget dance ended. The budget dance will never end. We'll always be dancing around the budget. We want to make sure that we're being effective for New Yorkers. And for me, I want to protect the social safety net, ensuring that we don't hurt marginalized, poor, vulnerable, and working class New Yorkers. That's what I'm focused on.
We are in budget season in New York City from now through June. New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, we always appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian, as always.